Good Day South Dakota. Coming up on In the Moment, Tech Radio. We'll chat with our panel of tech experts about the news of the day, and we'll explore the topics of cryptocurrency and tech gifts, including the answer to the question, has VR or virtual reality come of age? Well, we've got it all, plus your calls, texts, emails, and Facebook posts. We'd love to hear from you. Send your questions to inthemoment@sdpb.org. Send a tweet to me at KentSDPB. Join the discussion at facebook.com/techradio or send us a text, 956-SDPB. That's 956-7372. You can email your suggestions or questions to our guests today at our email address, inthemoment@sdpb.org. We'll hear from the panelists and you after this news from SDPB.
This is SDPB News. I'm Gary Allen Bolt. A $1,000 reward is being offered to anyone who has information about vandalism that happened to two historic buildings in Lead. The buildings had been broken into and apparently used for parties. Vandals used the building's tin and woodwork to build a bar and bonfires. Bureau of Land Management installed new locks, but the vandals re-entered through holes they put in the brick walls. Chip Kimball is field manager for the BLM. She says repairing these structures is not in their budget.
There is approximately $30,000 and up in damage that we're going to have to repair, and that's going to come out of taxpayer dollars. That's not something that we have in budget. So I want people to understand that while we're the caretakers of these buildings and while they're under our management, these belong to the American public. They don't belong to us. And so I'd really like help from them in catching the people that damage these buildings, because these mean a lot to a lot of people.
The Bureau of Land Management is asking if you have any information regarding the destruction, call their office in Belle Fourche. Sioux Falls just wrapped up its third driest November on record. Many locations in South Dakota and on the Northern Plains spent the month with above normal temperatures and next to no precipitation. Todd Heitkamp with the National Weather Service says last month's pattern was unusual. He says after the weekend, the warmer conditions will leave.
There's no doubt about that. I think a lot of people were thinking that they had moved down to Arkansas or Texas, as nice as the fall and the early winter has been. But this next week, it's going to be a cold, hard reality to let people know that they are actually living in South Dakota, because the temperature is going to fall. We're looking at highs in the 20s by this time next week.
Heitkamp says some people have used the phrase polar vortex to describe the upcoming change. Heitkamp says the phrase is overused and it doesn't explain what's happening next week.
You know, I would say this is just an average, normal cold push for this time of year, that the weather pattern has shifted to allow this Canadian air to move down south into our area, and it's just going to be continuing to be reinforced over the next, let's say, week to 2 weeks. It doesn't look like it's going to be a glancy blow. It's going to be around for a while.
Heitkamp says some light snow could fall Monday. He says he doesn't see any major storms coming into the state, but drivers need to be especially careful since roads are still warm and could turn slippery once snow begins. Developers of a planned wind farm in Lincoln County have canceled easements with more than 100 landowners. Dakota Power Community Wind has had designs of a project to build the state's largest wind farm. Up to 500 turbines were projected to produce as much as 1,000 megawatts of power. Some residents opposed the plan, and the Lincoln County Commission passed strict wind farm rules. Voters upheld the decision in July, and the developer ended the project. Dakota Power Community Wind spokesman Brian Minish refused comment. He says he plans to offer a public statement to county commissioners next week. South Dakota weather for the rest of this Friday, partly to mostly sunny, with highs of 45 to 55. Weather tonight, clear to partly cloudy with lows in the 20s. And on Saturday, partly cloudy, highs in the upper 40s to the upper 50s. For SDPB News, I'm Gary Allen Bolt. Coming up next, Tech Radio with the Computer Guys, part of today's In the Moment on South Dakota Public Broadcasting.
President Trump promised during the campaign that he was going to put coal miners back to work. Campaign's over, so how's it going?
I fell into the common error that, you know, I thought that the day Trump got elected, my troubles was over.
I'm Kai Rizdahl. We check in on coal country and bring you the rest of the day's business news next time on Marketplace.
Tonight at 6:30 Central, 5:30 Mountain on SDPB Radio. Program funding with your support and by Jade Presents with Daniel O'Donnell at the Orpheum Theater in Sioux City, Iowa, Sunday, February 25th. Ticket information available at jadepresents.com and orpheumlive.com.
Wherever the day's biggest story is unfolding, Morning Edition will connect you with the voices at the center of it all.
Police say a man in a rented Home Depot truck drove...
The indictment alleges that Manafort and Gates used...
This comes after the Catalan parliament declared independence.
No matter where news is breaking, get through daybreak with Morning Edition every day.
Listen between 5 and 9 Central, 4 and 8 Mountain on SDPB.
Program funding by First Bank and Trust Retirement Plan Services, where we believe the path to retirement security is the right retirement plan. First Bank and Trust, a single-source provider with expertise to help your company's plan succeed. More at bankeasy.com.
Support for reporting on technology and innovation comes from Juna Sleep System. Personalize your mattress. More information at junasleep.com.
And welcome to the December 1st edition of the In the Moment Tech Radio. I'm your host, Ken Osborne. We've gathered the experts to talk tech today, answer any questions you might have. In the studios of KCSD in Sioux Falls, we have Mac guru Joel Brovelite and Lemonly's John T. Meyer. And on the phone from the Bureau of Information and Telecommunications in Pierre, we have Jeff Litterick on the line. Hello, Jeff.
Hello, all.
How was your, first day of December?
Well, December is always kind of busy for us, especially this time with the weekend and stuff, because next Tuesday, of course, is the governor's budget address. So everyone is making sure everything is all prepared for that and that everyone can watch it and see it and all that kind of stuff. So it's kind of a busy Friday, Monday. So.
Yeah, of course, because, I had not forgotten about the governor's budget address, and there are several legislative meetings going around that, and... we're getting things tuned up here for another year of State House. Of course, all available online, on the app, on the website, and live, and then, recap. So, yeah, we're working towards that, too. I'm glad to see it's getting taken care of in Pierre as well. Guys in Sioux Falls, Joel and John T., welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks.
Howdy. How's everything going in the Sioux Falls world?
Well, it's a pretty nice October day here.
Isn't it?
So I'm enjoying the weather.
My watch is 47, and I had heard 50s this weekend.
I know,
so
crazy.
Probably a brown Christmas, but I'm okay with that.
I'm pretty sure it's just the world trying to let me finally get my yard work all done for the year. I think that's what's going on.
I think 2017 is in the upside down anyway, so that's what's going on.
You might be right.
Hard to get in the Christmas spirit, but we're going to give it a shot, I guess, as we get through the month. But several topics to talk about today, guys, and I want to take your temperature. I know we've talked about net neutrality on the show many, many, many times. And, in fact, Science Friday, the show on after the show, is going to tackle it. So we're not gonna hit it too hard today. But I kind of wanted to test the temperature of the three of you on basically from the one side of the spectrum, hair on fire, to the other side of the spectrum, which is I read the FCC chairman, Ajit Pai, came out with a list of his myths and facts as it relates to net neutrality. And, if I can paraphrase his article, it said, if it didn't happen before Obama's heavy-handed actions, it's not going to happen after. And it pretty much that was the answer to every one of the questions. And I it would have been nice to have some things backed up in fact, but it is what it is. And I didn't feel it was a great set of answers, but I'm wondering, let's start with Jeff because, we're going to start with you. How is your comfort level right now, knowing that they may repeal? Is it the Title II? Is that what it's formally called?
Yeah, basically, they may. It classifies ISPs as telecommunication carriers, and it's a lot of lingo jumble. And it's what allows the FCC to actually regulate them, because if they're not a telecommunications company, the FTC can regulate them, but the FCC cannot. But I just want to point out that little timeline about Obama. The FCC was acting on net neutrality all the way back to 2002 and 2003, long before the last presidency. Now, what happened right at Obama is the court, they were blocking Comcast and other people from doing some very weird things, especially without informing their users that they were blocking BitTorrent back in the early 2000s and stuff like that. Then they got sued because they did put regulations in, and the FCC lost that suit to the Supreme Court because they had not clarified that ISPs are common class carriers. So then they classified them and put all these rules in. So there have actually been court battles and regulations going back to the 1996 Act, actually, all the way back. But that all got overturned when the court said, well, you can't regulate them because you didn't classify them correctly. So they classified them correctly. And now that this is what he's trying to roll back and only let the FTC, which is not a telecommunications expert organization at all, regulate the ISPs instead of the FCC. So it's, you know, a hit of truth and a hit of non-truth all through that stuff. So.
Well, I guess so. This backs us way up, and it asks the basic question is, are ISPs telecommunications company? Is that the question?
Yeah, and there's a lot of legal stuff from the 1996 Telecommunications Act that you got to place in because, for example, Google would be classified as a computer company, but they also do Google Fiber. So are they? Is the whole company ISP, or is it a common carrier because it does some telecommunications, but most of it is considered commercial compute, which is a different classification? Mm-hmm. The FCC is trying to say they're not telecommunication carriers. They're in this other bucket that the FTC manages, and basically the FCC will wash their hands, and the FTC will be the only ones that can regulate them under a different set of rules and laws. So it's interesting because, you know, we all know CenturyLink, right?
Mm-hmm.
They're a telecommunications company and stuff. But is your cable TV provider one? Well, many cable TV providers also provide phone service. On the that side, they might be, right? But all phones are going to VoIP, which is an information service. And I would say computer, but really it's classified as either your telecommunications or you're an information service like a hosting company, or you're dealing with, you know, that kind of stuff. What side you on? Because one side's FTC only, the other side is FCC only, and it may take Congress maybe to pass a law to clarify all this stuff, so we don't have the courts going back and forth, and the FCC just, because the FCC can only do what Congress tells them. So if Congress tells them they are common class carriers, they have no choice in the matter. Right now, they have a choice in the matter. So maybe we need some laws to clear all this up one way or the other, for sure.
Well, Jeff, in your opinion, should these common class carriers or ISPs or whatever you want to call them, are they better regulated FCC or FTC in your opinion?
It's hard to say because the FTC has never really regulated them. It's a different set of laws and rules.
Mm-hmm.
If you think about how the FCC has regulated them up to this point, you can kind of know how they could regulate them. We don't know how the FTC can. There's different rules, the different fine mechanisms, there's different everything, plus a whole bunch of court battles on what parts of their rules can apply to them and stuff. It took, you know, almost 12 years for the first set of court battles to get through, and the FCC gets slapped down saying, well, you didn't classify them correctly, right? Expect a whole nother round about this. And what I'm most afraid of is net neutrality, the rules in themselves are not a problem as long as you have good ISPs out there. Comcast has already taken, they put out pledges a long time ago that we will be net neutrality. We will do all this stuff after they got fined a few times in the past.
Mm-hmm.
Second, the FCC announced the reversing of all those promises disappeared off their website. It's really then up to the individual ISPs. Is it going to be good or bad for the consumers? Because it will, it depends on where you live. Verizon will be one set. AT&T will be a different set. Comcast will be a totally different set. Midco can be a different set. They can all then do what they want, how they want. We, you know, it's a mixed bag of if your ISP is going to be good or bad.
So the folks that are running around with their hair on fire have valid concerns. We just don't know if it's going to reach those extremes eventually. What the FCC chairman is saying is nobody's going to do that. Come on, because you're going to lose all your customers and you're going to go out of business.
Well, I think what Jeff's saying, I think there's a lot of unknowns, that's for sure.
Okay.
But as a person who's very pro net neutrality, I think my concern is just it's a slippery slope. And so once you take the first step, then it's easier to take the second step. And so, yeah, that's my take. I don't know. You know, they can sit there and say, no, don't worry. It's like nothing's going to change. You won't see anything different. But I saw one article, you know, Comcast said, no, we're not going to. We're not going to throttle or pull back anything, but maybe we'll have some fast lanes and you can pay a little bit more for a fast lane. Like, to me, that's already
the same thing.
Start.
Yeah.
Right.
Just because you don't slow somebody down doesn't mean that because you speed somebody else up that you aren't then at a disadvantage.
So, Joel.
You know, one of the things in Ajit Pai's, white paper that he put out, you know, he has this myth and then he lists something like this is the end of the internet as we know it. Fact. The internet was free and open before the Obama administration's 2015, yada, yada, yada. Most of his explanations are that, well, if it didn't happen before 2015, it's not going to happen now, which is great if the internet was clocked back to what it was before 2015. But we all know things develop, things change, companies merge. That's a very empty example that he continuously uses
And one of the other things I want to point out, because I've seen this also point out, back then, everything was evolving and stuff. You didn't have the Googles and Facebooks. You know, one of the things an ISP could do to say, hey, you know what, you want cheaper internet access, well, we'll only charge you $10 a month, but you only now get access to Google and Facebook and maybe YouTube and Netflix, and that's it. Or you only have access to a very small subset of the internet. Back then, there weren't the big players, so Facebook could have paid an ISP to say, well, give us exclusive access that they can't use any other social media except us. That could happen now in the future, and that's what a lot of the professionals are very worried about. Because for the consumers, hey, I only have to pay $10, and hey, I only use Facebook and email and go to Google anyway. Why do I need all this other stuff? But once you're in there, then you'll never know what you're missing when other new services and stuff come up too, because you won't have access.
Well, do you think, John, do you think there's going to be a possibility, and then there's going to be like a sports tier? Oh, you wanted sports. Well, that's another, $5 a month, or that's another $10 a month.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's... if we're getting too in the weeds, and the listeners are like, wait, what is this? Like, explain this whole net neutrality thing. I'm a visual learner, and that's what we do at Lemonly. But I think the best visual, I think someone shared, I think Portugal has something like, without net neutrality, and it essentially looks like a cell phone plan with all these packages. And yeah, so you tier them up. You can have the social media package, the email package, the sports package, and it just looks like a cable plan used to look like. And so if you're wondering what this could be, that's a potential future.
Yeah, and to be fair, we don't know what it is going to be because, no one can predict the future. Another thing that he says right in there is broadband providers will charge a premium if you want to reach certain online content. And then he says his fact is this didn't happen before, yada, yada, 2015 heavy-handed internet regulations, and it won't happen afterwards. That is not a fact. That is just his prediction, which he might be right. It is possible everything he says might be correct, but it's also possible he might be wrong. And the truth is very likely somewhere in between. Verizon provider might say, well, we're not gonna clock the internet. We're gonna stop anything else. Some other provider might go ahead and do that.
Let's get this straight. That's a false statement. That is a false statement. Before the FCC, and this is one of the big lawsuits that determined that they were not covering class carriers, is the companies were actually rolling out plans to do exactly that. That if you paid for this, you'd have better Netflix access. If you paid for this, you'd do that. And it was both on the back end and on the consumer end. They were actually, the plans were in place, and the FCC sued them to stop them. And that's how this whole regulation and then the lawsuits happen and stuff. So while they didn't enact any of these, there were definite plans from AT&T and Comcast, for sure, and Time Warner Cable to do exactly that. So So that statement, I don't agree with at all. While they were technically, it's right because they were not implemented. They were, if the SEC had not sued them, that's the experience you would have had.
So the lens, I guess, folks at home, listeners can view this as or through is: do you feel that ISPs are telecom companies and should be regulated through the FCC, or not? This is kind of the question, and only time will tell. I guess this month it's not looking good. If you're the advocate of net neutrality, you want the rules to stay in place. But
what's going to happen, unless something drastically happens and the FCC, drastically, it's going to happen. The votes are there. Everyone knows it's going to happen. He's already said he's not going to back down. He's not going to listen to anybody. So unless he gets deappointed or something or kicked out or Congress passes a law, this is going to happen. We'll have to wait to see the incoming, hopefully, because Congress can always override this at any time. All they have to do is pass a law to the FCC. No, they are. Or actually just set a bill that directs the FCC to do something. So this is not irreversible down the road, but this is going to happen, and we'll have to kind of wait and see what's going to happen afterwards.
Well, let's do that. We'll take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to get into a much simpler discussion on cryptocurrency, of course. Well, maybe not. I don't know. We'll have to find out, but we'll do that right after this break.
As the flow of new migrants has slowed, harvesting the nation's crops has been left to an aging population of farm workers. And their health has suffered from decades of hard labor.
The slowdown is happening. You could just see your production drop, but it's difficult to really manage because there's not the younger people aren't wanting to come in and work in this industry.
I'm Kelly McEvers. That story this afternoon on All Things Considered from NPR News.
Listen, beginning at 3 Central, 2 Mountain on SDPB.
Program funding with your donation. And by Northern State University, presenting the Holiday Extravaganza, December 5th at the Harvey and Cynthia Jewett Theater in Aberdeen. Information at northern.edu/artsnsu.
Get the SDPB passport and start your journey through hundreds of outstanding PBS and South Dakota programs. Enjoy years of music, drama, and dance on Live from Lincoln Center or great performances. You unlock a vast video library, Masterpiece, Nova, Nature, so much more. Go to sdpb.org/passport now, join friends, and get your passport to start your journey.
Program funding with your annual support and by SDN Communications, providing network uptime for business, internet, and connectivity. Learn more at sdncommunications.com.
And we're back to In the Moment Tech Radio on SDPB. I'm your host, Ken Osborne. We have Matt Guru Joel Brovelet joining us today from Lemonly, John T. Meyer, and from the Bureau and Peer, Jeff Litterick. We're here to answer the questions that you may ask. If you are a Facebook aficionado, a great place for you to start is facebook.com/techradio. You can post your comments, your questions there. Don't be shy. Our phone number is 800-524-3604. That's 800-524-3604. We'd like to hear what you have to say on subjects as well, or if you have a question for us. Twitter users, send us questions to @KentSDPB. And the email address, again, is inthemoment@sdpb.org, inthemoment@sdpb.org. And not to put too fine of a point on net neutrality, but, again, the discussion coming up next hour on Sci-Fry is going to delve into a little bit of net neutrality too, if you just can't get enough. But we've had enough today on this show, but there is more coming up on this network. Just stay tuned. Gentlemen, Bitcoin seems to have gone crazy, although it's making some adjustments.
And it's not just Bitcoin. There's other ones that have been kind of, along with Bitcoin, that is just lesser well-known, doing the same thing.
Okay. Do we know why?
There's a few things going on. It's nothing's in a vacuum. First of all, China blocked all cryptocurrencies. That actually first depressed everything, and then everything shot back up as the market kind of reestablished itself and stuff. there's a whole bunch of different countries are evaluating if they're going to make this legal within their country or not. Some have already said, like China, blocked and shut down exchanges and made them illegal. At that point, also, Bitcoin kind of went down and went way back up because an estimated I'm going to get this number wrong without looking up the article. A whole bunch of Bitcoins, let's put it this way, are now gone forever because of some other stuff going on, which means the whole number of possible Bitcoins, which is a limited number, has now shrank dramatically, about 10%. So the price of any individual Bitcoin, of course, it's like money supply, goes up. So there's a lot of, you know, mixes, and then there's some Bitcoin forks going on with Bitcoin Cash, and there's some more, and another fork that was supposed to take place got canceled, which is going to affect the long-term Bitcoins. And so there's a lot of moving parts and pieces in this, and no piece is in isolation of what's causing the value to bounce around like it is.
I'd say two things in November, to Jeff's point. The fork that didn't happen, which was like the SegWit 2X, it was called, didn't happen. So you saw a little bit of a bounce back when that didn't happen. And then, I mean, I think the real answer right now is the public, as gamblers would say. The public is in. Like, there's the public teams in football, right? People bet on the Steelers and the Packers and the Cowboys. The public is in. I mean, people, your uncle at Thanksgiving dinner was saying, how do I buy a Bitcoin, right? And I remember years ago, we've talked about Bitcoins for years on this show and tried to explain it and tried to simplify it. And it's not simple, but when your uncle is asking about it at Thanksgiving dinner, the word is out, right? And so, and you saw that, you saw it shoot past 10,000. I mean, we're talking about an asset that at the beginning of the year was trading at $700.
And was 4,000 not that long ago too. That 4 to 10,000 happened real fast.
Correct. And peaked at around 11, and then they're definitely the general public, people who have been holding their coins. A lot of people seem to sell when it passed that 10K threshold. It bounced back down below 9, and now it's about 10.5 again. And Jeff's right, there are other coins too. The Ethereum is a very popular Litecoin. But I threw out this topic because I saw a great tweet that a VC out of San Francisco said. It was a series of three tweets where he kind of retweeted himself, or it said, Bitcoin will be $100,000 by 2020. Bitcoin will be $0 by 2020. And then the third tweet said, now I just have to delete the right tweet in 3 years from now.
Right. You'll be a genius.
Meaning the point is no one really knows. There's very smart people who believe it's going to be $500,000 by 2030. Because Jeff's right, there's only 21 million of Bitcoins and there ever will be. But there's a lot of very smart people who believe the whole thing is a bubble and it's a scam. So, and I don't know if the answer is somewhere. I don't think the answer is actually in the middle. It's probably one or the other.
And one of the big unknowns is, right now, Bitcoin has some technical limitations in terms of how many transactions per minute it connects. It can be done worldwide with Bitcoin. So that is what the fork was about, was to increase the speed so that you could have more transactions. And it actually is a technical limitation built into the currency and how it's made. So there's now a whole bunch of other people threatening different forks to do this. Bitcoin Cash was the fork that was designed to also help speed stuff up and make it more widely acceptable, almost like credit card payments and stuff, use it the same way. As these forks, you know, work out themselves, and if they either happen or don't happen, that's going to make a humongous difference.
Did it get worked out? Because I made a hotel reservation last night for one of my favorite places to stay in Rapid City for the weekend. And one of my options were PayPal, MasterCard, and Bitcoin was there. Mm-hmm. So,
and it's becoming more common. The problem, the technical, and I don't want to get too technical. The problem is, because of the way Bitcoin is structured, only a set number of transactions can occur per minute worldwide. And we could talk a little bit about this, how they're trying to speed this up by stealing users' electricity and computer power. But the issue comes in that it's a very low number. We're talking like 100. So what happens is, as these transactions become more frequent, what happens is when you make that purchase, the merchant actually doesn't get their Bitcoin maybe for 12 hours later. So they're kind of trusting you. There's a time delay, kind of like a credit card. You know, you do that. They go to the credit card. They hope the credit card will pay them. They do a processing and all this stuff and get back. There's that kind of humongous delay where they're hoping they actually get paid, and that time is increasing. As more and more people use it, people are estimating up to where it could take 6 months to get paid. and that's one of the technical limitations they're really trying to work out, and that's going to keep the price very high until those things are worked out.
This seems like a scammer's dream.
The part that I wanted to, that I threw out, and we were pre-show for topics, and you know this could probably take a whole segment itself, but right now the word in the news is about these coins, about Bitcoin, about Ethereum, and are they like gold? It's a new asset class. All these different things. The real exciting thing, I think, the thing that we're going to be talking about in 3, 4, 5 years is the technology that makes this stuff possible. The blockchain technology, this idea that each little block is protected by cryptography, very basic, very complex math, basically, and then put together in this chain creates a distributed ledger so that a transaction or an agreement or a contract can be made without a third party, without a bank or an intermediary, and put on the blockchain and be both safe and secure, but also open. And so what this means is you could imagine basically any type of contract or agreement that you do in the world could someday be on blockchain. So we're talking about banking, we're talking about a mortgage, we're talking about even a handshake agreement that Joel and I make here across the table for a bet or a wager. You could put on blockchain and it's open ledger where everyone sees. And that's the thing, I think, if someone's listening and really interested in, sure, you could dabble in Bitcoin, and don't take me as financial advisor, but I would be spending time instead learning about blockchain.
Yes, blockchain can be used for a lot more than just cryptocurrencies in many, many ways. And it has both disadvantages and advantages. The way they implemented the blockchain is what limits the number of transactions in this case, in Bitcoin, behind the scenes. But you can get bigger blockchains, but in the Bitcoin thing, the people are afraid is as you get bigger blockchains, you actually give more power to centralized banks and stuff to kind of control the addition and how you add stuff to that blockchain. So it's a trade-off in terms of openness and true transparency behind the scenes versus, you know, can we do like a credit card processor, 5 million, you know, sold transactions per second instead of 3 transactions per second worldwide and stuff like that. So there's some trade-offs. But blockchain is going to be used for a lot of stuff in medicine and other stuff that has nothing to do with financial, too.
Correct. Agreed.
One of the things I heard somebody mention that was, you know, well, this is all fine and good. It's over 10,000. Don't basically don't invest any money you don't have. Don't go into debt to invest in it because you don't know what's going to happen.
It should be the classic. Don't invest anything you can't afford to lose. Right? I mean, you're still, it's still a risk, and you're taking a flyer.
And one of the things to remember, especially not so much with Bitcoin Cash right now because they've gotten to a bigger blockchain, but with the original Bitcoin, every day that goes by, there's to do these transactions and add these blockchains is what's called Bitcoin miners. They're the ones that are actually validating the transactions and adding the blocks to the Bitcoins and stuff. Every day, the CPU power required to do that is actually increasing. And that's kind of one of the reasons why, you know, you may pay for your hotel with Bitcoin, but they may not get the validation that the Bitcoin was actually transferred for 6-8 hours because someone has to mine the key block to make it happen. And because of the technical limitations, as we go, it requires more and more CPU. In fact, graphics cards were in short supply up until this last quarter because people were building basically supercomputer farms just to do Bitcoin mining. So that is where a lot of the real money was in the past in Bitcoin. And to create a Bitcoin costs hundreds of dollars in electricity now. So one of the things we're seeing on the security front is, well, how do the Bitcoin miners get around having to pay all this money out because their profit margins are getting slimmer and slimmer? And this is a warning for everyone because it hasn't been made much in the news is they're actually invading websites and forcing your PC when you browse to websites now to mine Bitcoins, eating up your CPU and power over thousands of computers using a little bit of each in order to increase the CPU of the mining part so that they can do mining faster, more efficient. The problem comes in is they're finding more and more trick techniques to make you stay on page and stuff in the background so that your computer is running 60-70% CPU all day long, and if you leave it on all night long, until you reboot it, mining bitcoins, and you're the one paying for the electricity on it. So they're not, but they're making all the advantages and making all the money off of it.
How are they getting paid? Are they doing just for doing that transaction or just creating that block?
Yep, they get coins out of it. They're the ones who create new coins in this process. So when they create a new coin, and it may take X number of days on and X number of currency, electricity and bill and, you know, buying video credits, they own that coin. And then they can resell it right now, you know, for over $1,000 a coin. So when they mine a coin while doing all these key block transaction stuff, and they find a new coin, they own it. So it's very advantage for them to keep their costs down, because for every coin they find, they can sell it at the market price.
Okay. Yeah, I was curious as to how, if Jeff decides he's going to make a server farm and he's going to mine Bitcoin, how you get paid in that whole
Well, thing. And that's the I guess if we now I will you know, I'm not an actual financial advisor, so I guess I can give financial advice, which is the irony of those rules. But you know, I would be wary if you've heard of these, and they're getting even more complicated, but these ICOs, which are these initial coin offerings, these other type of tokens and coins that have been created where you're supposed to get something for doing something. But the interesting thing, and these things are going bananas, and they're not even, it's not like the internet bubble where you're at least getting equity in pets.com. Now, obviously pets.com didn't make it, but those venture capitalists thought they had something. You are actually just giving money to these coins, hoping that these coins will increase, or you're giving money to these ICOs, getting coins, hoping that the value will increase. So those I would be very wary of right now, and they're popping up all over the world, and some of them are scams. And so, yeah, it's a really interesting space. I think the technology is going to change the world, and we're in a very, very much of a Wild West times right now. And I've heard a lot of people liken 2017 and cryptocurrency very much to, say, 1998, 1999 and the internet. And so we're early. You're going to see a lot of innovation. You're going to see a lot of failure as well, but it'll be an interesting space to watch.
And a lot of speculation. A little bit of Bitcoin history. When Bitcoin first came out, a person with a PC could run it in the background, you know, when they're not using the computer, and actually get hundreds of coins. It was very easy, and that's part of the way Bitcoin works. It was very easy at the beginning to make new money, to mine these coins out. So people with a laptop, if they just, you know, let it going, not using much power, could make, you know, 400 or 500 coins. Today, it requires banks of computers working literally millions of CPU time hours to create a single coin or part of a coin. So the price of this has gone up. That's why you're seeing a lot of these new cryptocurrencies kind of coming out, where the miners want to go back to a system where it's easy to create these coins now, and then over time it becomes harder, so that they kind of control the currency to begin with, because they have the coins. They're the ones who are giving them out, and they decide when they want to sell them. And then later on, when it's hard to make these, the price is always going to go up. So you may see a lot of these new ones come out. Be very careful about investing, because that doesn't mean they're going to pan out at all in the end, because the foundation is people trying to be a little bit greedy and try to replicate Bitcoin, but you know, if everyone doesn't buy in, it's not going to be the same thing.
Okay. So lots of words of caution, and I just hearken back to something that John said, and that's some of these are just completely scams from the get-go.
And one thing I want to mention on the Bitcoin mining in your browser, when you go to a website, there's over 3,000 websites through their ad networks that do this now. When you open their page, they will actually use your CPU through JavaScript in the background to mine. Antivirus does not detect this. This is within a browser. This is not a Windows issue. It's not a Mac. It's not even a phone issue. Any browser that runs JavaScript can be used to mine in the background. And they actually come up with techniques to hide the browser windows so you don't realize your browser is still running in the background mining. This can put a significant load on your CPU. The very first ones would eat up your CPU to 100%, keep it there so they were easy to discover. Most of the new ones are pretty smart, but it is eating up a lot of power, and in the end, you have to pay for it. So make sure you keep your browsers closed, and if you're using ad blockers and stuff, most of those will now try to block the cryptocurrency, but none of your security software, the browsers themselves, will block that from happening. You need to run an ad blocker, uBlock, AdBlock Plus, something like that, and it can happen on any browser, including your phone, your iPad. It just has to support JavaScript. So be aware of that. And if it's on like a battery-powered device, it's going to eat your battery up pretty fast. So.
Any other easy way to detect that for your home system if it's running and you think you may?
They're getting good enough that with hiding the browser windows that, and, for example, most people tab in Windows, they're have a shortcut to their browser. The you won't even be able to tell your browser's closed unless that shortcut disappears, and the only way to do that is take that off the bar, and most people don't. Or open Task Manager and make sure all your browser windows are closed. Or watch your Task Manager and wonder why your CPU is at 50% all day, right, when you're doing nothing. They're training themselves to hide themselves as good as possible because, in the end, they're stealing basically your money, your electricity bill, and making lots of money off of it. So they have really good motives to hide this and make you do all the work versus them spending, you know, $500,000 on server equipment every year and video cards. Why not get everyone that just goes to a website just to do it for us, right? So this is only going to get worse, and it's going to be kind of an arms race. So just be aware it's happening is the most important thing.
Well, let's just keep those people out of our computers to begin with. That'd be a good start, wouldn't it? Anyway, we're going to move on from this topic. And we're going to talk more about, again, giving away our money, but hopefully getting some fine products in the end. We're going to talk a little bit about how Black Friday went and maybe some gift ideas for the holidays, but we're going to do that after this.
I'm Ira Plato. This week on Science Friday, the FCC could soon vote to allow your internet service provider to charge you more for faster service. What the end of net neutrality could mean for the internet as we know it. Plus, were prehistoric female farmers stronger than modern athletes? Their bones tell the tale on Science Friday from PRI.
This afternoon, beginning at 1 Central, Noon Mountain, on SDPB Radio.
Program funding with your support and by Jade Presents with Daniel O'Donnell at the Orpheum Theater in Sioux City, Iowa, Sunday, February 25th. Ticket information available at jadepresents.com and orpheumlive.com.
Planning a fun festival? Perhaps your hometown thespians are performing a romantic comedy. Whatever your event is, let folks across the state know about it for free on SDPB's online calendar. Simply go to sdpb.org/calendar and click on Submit an Event. Then enjoy the festival or the romance.
Program funding with your support. And by Drs. Dan Gady and Melissa Gibson of Southeastern Dental Center, welcoming you to their new facility in Southeastern Sioux Falls. More information at sedentalcenter.com.
Support for reporting on technology and innovation comes from Juna Sleep System. Personalize your mattress. More information at junasleep.com.
And we're back to the final segment of In the Moment Tech Radio for this December 1st. Couple of programming notes. We're back on December 15th, so one more time before Christmas. So be sure to join us then. And Jeff mentioned earlier that the governor's budget address is coming up on Tuesday, and want to mention that along as well. Live on SDPB Radio, TV, online. We're going to live tweet it. Pretty much all the coverage that you can imagine on Tuesday. So we're all looking forward to that. But one more segment, and I want to start off, guys, with a little recap on Black Friday this year. Online sales sort of boomed, I guess. Almost a 17% increase in dollars compared to last year. John, what's your take on how Black Friday went? Did you purchase a lot of things online this year versus last?
I purchased nothing online this year, and so I'm probably a bad person to lead with as far as Black Friday.
No,
I don't ever do the I don't ever go out and shop, you know, early or late in the morning or late at night, early in the morning. I did a little bit of the whole small business Saturday stuff, which That's probably a little bit closer and near and dear to my heart. But
sure.
I did see that sales were up. That seems to be a good, you know, good for the economy, good for retail in America. I don't know. Just maybe a little bit tired of all of it, right? That's probably my take.
Okay. Joel, you tired of this too?
Well, I can't say I'm either tired or not tired of it. You know, it's Christmas. You buy gifts. So, yeah, Black Friday, mostly just because I was out of town, we mostly did online this year. But my wife's usually pretty good. She usually buys ahead anyway. So, this is probably the first time I didn't actually go out to a store on Black Friday. Not that I always buy a lot, but usually
was there like a The Gift this year? I mean, it seems like the normal, like, you know, TV flat screens are on discount and, you know, I guess iPhones with the iPhone 10, but I didn't hear.
You couldn't get one of those.
Sure. So like, was there something that was like,
well, there were a lot of good sales, as far as Apple products go on iPhone 8, sure. iPads, and watches. There were some pretty good sales on that.
Okay.
Well, I'm referencing an infographic, speaking of infographics, from Mike's Gear Reviews, it was sent to me, and they list some brands and products: AirPods, the pajama masks toys, if you've seen those, LOL surprise toys, Hatchimals, Pokemon Sun and Pokemon Moon, Nintendo Switch, and Xbox One X. So those were the
Nintendo Switch. I think that looks pretty cool. I've never played with one, but I've seen that. I think that seems something innovative and slightly new as far as a product. I don't know if any listeners have one of those. I'd be curious to hear a review or testimonial.
Okay.
I love my AirPods. I know we've talked about that on this show before, but that's a great gift, I think, in that 140-ish range if you're shopping for somebody this year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. But they made the top of the list, I guess, the AirPods. Those are kind of the kids' things. Boy, the FBI reported over 200,000 background checks for gun sales on Friday, which was way up. So I guess we'd have to include that as a popular item sold on Black Friday. Well, there was a gift for somebody
Rather
else
not.
Or somebody for themselves. That was seems like the big box retailers, Target, 600 teddy bears a minute. That's what they're saying.
Good to see the teddy bear is still relevant.
Yeah, that is nice to see. Absolutely.
Classic.
Amazon, of course, claimed 45-50% of all Black Friday sales. Walmart got about 10. I guess the remaining gravy, the remaining 40% would be sort of everyone else. It was interesting to see some of the major retailers that sort of failed. Their systems weren't up to Black Friday. They weren't able to scale, I guess, might be one of the reasons. I'm not sure if, you know, database kind of, I can't tell you what the technical reasons were why the websites were down, but
so you said sales were up 17%. At least in my Facebook feed or my social networks, I didn't see any of the traditional, like, you know, people getting plowed over and mauling for products I'm sure those existed, but it seemed a little calmer this year.
Actually, I'll make this because sales were up 17%, but online. I was in Sioux Falls.
I've been in
Sioux Falls almost every Thanksgiving and stuff. And to be honest, it was one of the more pleasant 41st Street driving experiences I ever had that day. The parking lots were okay, but even I could find – I didn't go out to the 7 a.m. stuff, but I could find stuff pretty easily. So sales seemed to be up, but I think almost all the growth was on online side from everything I've read. In fact, I wouldn't be surprised outside of a few regions if the retail shoppings are not down, but they made up for it on the online side.
Hmm. To specifically answer your question, 5 people were injured this year, which is much better than last year's 2 deaths on Black Friday because of involved in the shopping deals. Again, this is coming from Mike's Gear Reviews. So that's a better year. Maybe because they were online shopping at home rather than out battling it out on the Black Friday battleground.
Yeah, not worth potential life. One button click on Amazon.
Personal, for me, I didn't see anything that inspired me to go want to stand in a queue line or get a ticket or a bracelet or whatever and be there. But that's me. You know, I guess I'm half the population, but and it split right down the middle. It was males and females online buying things. It was, I think it was 59%. I guess not right down the middle. 59% female, 41% male this year. So a few more people, a few more women online, interestingly enough. So that's interesting.
Seems to make sense as well in my head, but.
I had a question. We were talking about VR around the office today, and we're wondering. I saw a lot of the VR, and I don't want to call them headsets because they're just the things that fit on your head that you put your phone into, right? Because they're $5, $15, up to in the $30 range for some of these. But I guess it's equipment to utilize VR better. Are we getting to a tipping point when VR is becoming that acceptable thing and people are using it more? Is the content out there yet? Joel, do you have some VR gear for your daughter?
You know, like probably everybody else with a kid, you know, I've got a couple of those little headsets. No, I don't think we're at a tipping point right now. We're
still on the curve.
One caveat to that is the PS4 VR gear is very, very popular and kind of brought back the PS4 from low sales. So, you know, we'll see in a year or so. I definitely think the other manufacturer is going to latch onto that, and we'll see more and more of it. But we're really still just at the beginning of that.
So for folks, VR, virtual reality, that sort of immersive technology, you put a sometimes a very awkward-looking device on your face.
Sometimes.
And that's the key here. I mean, if you're really, you know, techie, into, you know, latest technology, don't mind tinkering with things and looking around and fixing things and figuring out how things work, VR, there's lots of great stuff to do and look at as long as you're willing to chase it down. When it's going to come to a tipping point is when a company, whether that's Apple or another company, makes it easy and not ridiculous. That is when you're going to see a tipping point, and that will come, but we're not there yet.
Yeah, I think a little further up the curve on AR, because of, I think, Pokemon Go is the most like validation there people are still using that.
The same company's going to do a Harry Potter AR,
saw that.
Which we should say AR is
augmented
reality, yep. Which is kind of a cross between the two.
And in my point, because there's a lot of actually top-end games coming out in VR, there's Doom, there's Skyrim, there's Fallout 4, the PlayStation. Even on the PC side, they were selling the headsets at a good deal for Black Friday. But the issue I've had with all of them, Killing Floor is another popular game that's now coming out in VR. There's no games that – they're all conversions. There's no native VR games that really wow yet and stuff to make people want to buy for sure. That will get people used to it, and then the rest of it will come along with the phones and stuff later when people actually start getting used to it. Because, yeah, no matter what, to have, you know, it's going to look weird to people until everyone kind of accepts it. So
I'm excited about the educational possibilities of VR. Seem to be a lot of virtual reality tours going on, which is a great thing. If you can't get out of your house or don't want to, can't afford the hotel and the flight or whatever, but you want to experience a little bit about what these places are, I think that's exciting for me personally. But I think in education, I think it can go a long way to helping explain things. I guess get kids more interactive into learning. I guess we'll see if that happens. But I suspect it might. Seems to be a lot of companies making some investments into doing just that, but right now starting off with the gaming and of course,
I think that's a natural place to start for something like that. You have gamers, often early adopters, pretty techie, probably. So obviously more about entertainment than in before we dig into deeper. How will VR affect, like you said, education or healthcare or something like that? So it's a natural fit, and we'll see how they tinker and get adoption there.
We're all adults here, so we can mention that the porn industry has definitely, I guess, embraced the technology and are doing things And certainly brought a lot of advents of some new technology as far as the internet goes. I think there's some, you know, some bandwidth things that can thank that industry over the years. But whether it helps it become more of a mature product and out there for more people, we'll have to see, I guess. Perhaps the killer app, maybe not. Should at least mention that. Now it's a very awkward silence on the show.
That's okay. We're just letting you you go with that one all
by
yourself.
I slowly spiral down and see what I'll eventually say.
Yep. I tuned out right after you said killer app. So, you know, you lasted a long time.
Thanks. Appreciate that. Who here has strapped on the goggles and played a game and done a tour?
Besides
Jeff.
No, I'm just kidding. I'm just kidding.
I see.
I've done the, what's the Google one where it's like the cardboard.
Cardboard.
Thing.
Is that a great name or not?
Is that what it's called?
Yeah, it's called cardboard. Yeah. And you download the app. The app's called Cardboard.
And I think it was like a flying simulator. Like you just looked around and you're flying. That's all I've really done. And it was awkward at best. But yeah, I haven't seen any real awesome use of it yet. Personally, I know with Facebook acquired Oculus, that's a big investment that they made. But I think they're still kind of sputtering on how to implement that.
Boy, the price has come down. The Oculus gear and the controllers is like $399 this year, which is a fraction of what it started out as. So that was good to see. Maybe they're trying to spark some more retail sales and get that going. Or perhaps the cost is coming down because of the manufacturing. I'm not sure, but it just that struck me this year.
So in this PlayStation example, you buy the PlayStation and also get a headset, or how's that work?
It's just VR gear you add on to the PlayStation.
And so then your PlayStation's obviously hooked up to your TV, but you don't need the TV. You just use the goggles.
Yeah, I think you just go directly to the console. Yeah, and I think you have your choice to play on the TV or the console. I sound really old here. Someone probably knows the actual answer to this, but that's my understanding.
I mean, to me, that's what makes Switch so interesting is that it has that mobility factor that you plug in and then you can go on the go.
I think that's definitely where things are going as well. I mean, but it's a no-brainer that all these consoles will eventually be VR, at least capable.
Sure.
I see that its displays are being used, or the headsets are being used, even for people doing drone racing and controlling the drones and things, and that makes sense versus looking at a large LCD screen, you know, in the sunlight and other things. So perhaps that'll help as well. Unfortunately, that's all the time we have for today's show. Thank you, gentlemen. We'll see you all back on the 15th. I want to thank our panelists today and remind you that SDPB is always there for you with our app or at sdpb.org. Go there and click on Listen. Have a great weekend, everyone.
I'm Eric Glass of This American Life, and here's a voicemail we got from a listener.
Hi, I'm Ben Burr, and I like This American Life because when my parents are listening to it, they don't really talk to me. They just basically let me do whatever I want.
Encouraging fine parenting in all 50 states, This American Life.
Sometimes I listen to some of the stories too, and it's a really good show.
Saturday morning at 11 Central and Sunday night at 7 Central on SDPB Radio.
Funding for the broadcast of this program is made possible with your donations and by SDN Communications, the business broadband provider and cybersecurity leader. Learn more at sdncommunications.com.
Sign up today to enjoy the latest from SDPB delivered right to your inbox. Our digital team is working for you, pulling together fascinating stories about South Dakota and the world. Our e-newsletters share what's happening in the arts, culture, education, even recreation. The newsletters are free, and it's so easy to sign up for delivery right to your inbox. Just go to sdpb.org today.
This is South Dakota Public Broadcasting. South Dakota Public Broadcasting can also be heard at K201AP Belfouche and K201AQ Hot Springs at 88.1, K219CM Aberdeen at 91.7, K214BN Edgemont at 90.7, K217CE Huron at 91.3, K204GC Lead at 88.7, K215AI Mitchell at 90.9, K242CH Pier at 96.3, and K203BN Pringle at 88.5.